Welcome to Parents' Perspective. The kids were so excited they were making their parents breakfast in bed. They heated the oven and put glasses and dishes on two trays, all ready to go. When they finally burst into their parents' room, their surprised mom and dad had a double surprise. The children had prepared their favorites for breakfast, pizza and Coke. From a parent's perspective, how important is breakfast, and what can we do to help improve what our children eat in the morning? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today has had a lot of experience dealing with nutrition issues and writing about them. Patty Pukach is a registered dietitian and mother of a grown son and college-age daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Patty.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we all recognize that kids are supposed to have a balanced, nutritious breakfast. But out here in real life, we also know it's not always so easy to get them to eat their whole wheat toast, orange juice, and yogurt. What's the most important thing parents should remember about breakfast?
That they eat something. Anything. Anything, truly.
Does that mean candy bars?
I have a hard time with that one. And I think later on we might talk about things to avoid. But I think it's critical that kids eat something for breakfast. One, so they get in the habit. And two, so that they get something going. So that their blood sugar comes up, so that they can pay attention. So that they can function.
So it's like putting gas in the car, I used to tell my kids.
You know, that's what our teachers told us when we didn't want to eat our own breakfast. But it's true.
Now, what happens when kids don't have a decent breakfast? Has research been done to show whether breakfast does affect performance?
There is research that backs up what we all knew all along. And that's that if kids don't eat, if people don't eat, they can't concentrate. They have a low blood sugar. And the upshot of that is that they can't concentrate. They're restless. They can't listen. They sometimes even want to fall asleep. I think it's important to remember that, especially with children, not only did they miss breakfast, but they may not have eaten since dinner the night before. By the time we want to give them breakfast, it could be 12 hours already. If they skip that, they could be going into school having not eaten for 12, 14, 16 hours. And it really doesn't work.
That's interesting. We think of kids as snacking all the time, but I guess once they have bedtime, they're really not snacking, and so it's a very long time in between.
It's a very long time, and I think that we've tried to work on kids not to snack as much, eat your dinner and then the kitchen's closed sort of mentality. And that may not be good either. Perhaps we should give the kids some sort of, quote, healthy snack before they go to sleep, before they brush their teeth. They still need breakfast.
What kind of healthy snack would you have kids eat at bedtime?
Half a sandwich, some popcorn, a piece of fruit.
Something to bridge that distance between dinner and bedtime.
And certainly we don't need to encourage our teenagers to eat because they're probably doing it anyway. They're probably up long after we're asleep.
Except those are the ones that I think are very much at risk for not having breakfast.
I think they are. And I think that we need to work on breakfast for them, because if your kids are like my kids, they were eating at night. The issue of not eating after dinner and then missing breakfast was, I guess, in my mind, directed towards elementary schoolers.
Mm-hmm. When we have more control anyway.
Well, absolutely. Or we think we do.
Patty, what were your biggest hang-ups with your own kids, and how did you cope?
They didn't want to eat breakfast. They didn't want to get up. They didn't want to give up the extra 10 minutes sleep. I started almost packing lunches. The kids weren't riding a school bus, and I don't know what the rules about riding school buses and eating are. But I packed granola bars, a half a sandwich, some yogurt, a shake made with bananas and skim milk, that they could eat in the car while we drove to school. Getting them up, getting them dressed, getting their books together, and getting breakfast really seemed to be overwhelming.
That's a really interesting concept, to give them food that they can have on the way to school.
Unless the school bus doesn't allow
right.
it.
I don't have any idea. I would bet that. You they don't let it happen on buses.
But I guess that brings up that whole business about all these foods that are prepackaged and you can have them in 3 seconds and they come in a package or in a, I don't know, a box or something or other.
Breakfast bars.
Yeah. What do you think about those?
I worry sometimes about the fat and the sugar. I hate to sound like everybody else who's giving out nutrition information, but reading labels is critical. Breakfast bars or yogurts that are low in fat, low in sugar. If the kids can brush their teeth after they eat all that when they get to school, so much the better. But read labels. Reading labels is what it comes down to.
One of my kids got hooked on an apple, and it had to be a Granny Smith apple, and peanut butter every morning for breakfast with a glass of milk.
It works.
But I was worried about carbohydrates. And then, of course, this morning on the radio, I learned the apple has carbohydrates.
Carbohydrates aren't bad.
No, no. I thought he should have bread or toast or something
apples
in addition.
Apples have carbohydrates?
Well, that's
absolutely
what they said.
Absolutely.
What other fruits have carbohydrates?
Fruit,
I've done the same thing.
All fruits.
When they made those pyramids, they had breads in a different place than fruits.
Breads are complex carbohydrates. Fruits have more simple. And they're good. We need them.
In other words, if you get a carbohydrate from one of them, you don't have to worry about not getting it from the other?
At that meal. That's what I was concerned about.
My most important issue with breakfast was that they eat it. You know, the old parenting thing, pick your battles.
Yeah.
If you can get something in, you're better off than nothing in.
Well, I figured, I guess he was eating something nutritious, and I was very happy, and I was on a high, and it was sort of like, okay, let's see what else we can get him to eat that's nutritious.
Absolutely. You are absolutely right, Linda.
Well, but there was a discussion about, well, what should he eat? What carbohydrates should he have? And I said, this delicious whole wheat toast. I don't like whole wheat toast.
Bananas and peanut butter. If you can get them to eat on whole wheat bread as a sandwich, they can take it in the car. It's easy. It doesn't make a mess. It's something that I would advocate with a glass of milk so they can get some calcium. And you're done.
By the way, what about the new kinds of orange juice that say as much calcium as a glass of milk? Is that okay? Because my kids are not milk drinkers, so I'm giving them this orange juice with calcium and going, here, this should be fine.
I think it's good. A lot of kids don't drink milk, and calcium is a major issue. And as we're all getting older and worrying about osteoporosis and broken hips in nursing homes, calcium's which tells you my age, calcium is a major issue. I think one of the things we need to worry about with fruit juices is that kids fill up on them. And it's easier to drink a glass of juice than to eat something, especially when your mother's breathing down your back. So you want them to have some juice, but not a huge glass of it. You don't want them to fill up on that. With juices, you need to be careful that they're drinking 100% juice. You know, so often the kids want to drink the juice mixes that are, 10% fruit juice and the rest
sugar water.
And those, I don't think, serve a real purpose and don't really belong in anywhere except in treats.
We touched on the morning rush business, but is there other stuff that parents should know about sending the kids off healthfully and being able to do it very quickly because everyone's rushing around?
I don't think it's too late to try waking them up a little earlier. 5 minutes can make a huge difference in whether they sit down. Some families like to use breakfast time as a time for everybody to connect for just a second in the morning before everybody goes their separate ways. If you can set the table ahead of time, put the cereal out ahead of time, the box on the table, you can do it all the night before, then all kids have to do is grab the milk and grab the juice out of the refrigerator. It's worth a shot, I think. At least some families set aside one day where everybody eats breakfast, and you can do it that way. You know, kids, you can sleep later these other days. You know, Wednesday's the middle of the week, we're going to connect. And setting things up ahead of time, I think, is a good idea.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about breakfast for kids.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with registered dietitian Patty Pukach today about breakfast for kids.
We can picture making lovely little tiny pieces of toast in cookie cutter shapes like you see on magazine covers and decorating them with little pieces of fruits and vegetables for the toddlers, time permitting, of course. What in the world can we do for our middle schoolers who are picky eaters in the morning?
Anything they want.
That's so funny to advise parents.
Going back to my original premise that anything is better than nothing, getting them to eat something, they need it. Their bodies need it. They don't know they need it. We know they need it. Their teachers know they need it. They have to deal with what happens if they don't eat it. When I was growing up, I ate leftovers from dinner the night before. If there was spaghetti left over, I ate it. My mother, and again, this is dating me, wanted me to have eggs, bacon, and toast. We all know now that that's a treat breakfast and not something to do very often. Then it was thought to be good. And my poor mother used to see me, eating leftover spaghetti or leftover soup or whatever. And she was a little apoplectic, but she knew that it was more important to eat breakfast than to fight about what it was. You know, an English muffin with jelly on it or those English muffin pizzas that we all used to make our little kids, older kids will eat those too. Mm-hmm. And it has the cheese with calcium. It had tomato sauce and everything else that we need.
I was always told somehow that fruit gives you energy. So if my kid wants to go for a Coke, I say, here, have some orange juice instead. Is that so, that fruit gives you the energy? I'm thinking about energy foods.
Simple carbohydrates are absorbed more readily, and we absorb them quickly. They get into our blood system quickly.
So that's what's in juice.
That's what's in juice.
Juice and fruit.
And that's what's in sugar, and that's what's in candy, and that's what's in real sweet things that taste sweet, unless they're artificially sweetened. Complex carbohydrates, breads, cereals, pastas, enzymes in your body have to act on them to break them down into sugars so that you can use them, and that takes longer.
It's like a time-release pill, sort of.
Oh, that's smart, Sandy. Or Linda,
who Let's
are
remember
you?
That. At one point, I had a kid on a soccer team where we were all supposed to bring the snacks, and this was way back so that it was at the beginning. Everybody was sort of learning, and I thought we were all supposed to bring oranges or some kind of fruit, and there was one mother who was adamant that fructose and sucrose were the same thing, so she brought, I don't know, cookies or donuts or something, and I was so appalled, and she said, oh, it's all the same thing. Is that true?
No.
Good.
Fructose actually breaks down into two simple sugars, which is the same as sugar, but it doesn't have any of the vitamins that the oranges had. And I also think, going back to soccer, it's more than just the oranges for energy, because really those kids can run for 40 minutes without a snack. They need some water, but they don't need an energy snack if they've eaten before the game.
But you wouldn't say that giving cookies is the same thing as giving oranges in terms of the sucrose, fructose.
No, it's more concentrated in the cookies. A whole orange is 80 calories or something. One cookie is 80 calories. Mm-hmm.
And now for the teenager who wants to grab the granola bar and run out the door and announces, I'll get something later, Mom, don't worry. How can we handle them?
I can't speak for your teenagers. I don't believe them.
Right. That's what I'm worried about. I don't believe them either.
I think going back to an English muffin, going back to a bagel, going back to a sandwich, you can ask them ahead of time, and this takes some energy. What is it? If you could have anything to eat in the morning, what should I have for you? Then you can go over the list with them in a thoughtful way, go over what's reasonable and what's not reasonable. A candy bar is not great in the morning. It will get them going, but it's not what we want. They could have pretzels and peanut butter. If they want to stick some pretzels in a baggie and eat them at the bus stop or eat them in the car, you know, that may be socially a little cooler than eating the peanut butter sandwich your mother made you. A lot of the schools, I believe, have vending machines. And I know that's a whole nother issue. But you might want to find out what's in the vending machines and go over with your adolescent what you think are reasonable things to get out of the vending machines.
And then they're going to only get the reasonable things?
No, oh, sure.
But at least they know where you're coming from.
Most school systems have arguments all the time, off and on, about those vending machines. Parents feel there should be something available for the kids. The same parents feel, don't give my kids Coke or, you know, candy bars, give them nutritious snacks. And if it's only popcorn and juice and pretzels available, then that's what they'll buy. But it doesn't happen like that, I don't think.
I don't think it does either, but we can dream sometimes. after all, we're parents.
Are there certain foods that we should always have on hand for a good start for the day? You mentioned a few, and then we can ask you, what foods should we keep away from our kids in the morning if we can manage to?
There should always be milk. Mm. There should always be, I think, a high vitamin C juice, orange juice, pineapple juice, tomato juice. I think there should always be a bread product, hopefully one that they can grab and go with, because unfortunately, that's the way we live.
So we need to make the bread into like sticks, toast sticks.
Or pretzels, or an English muffin, or a bagel that they can grab and go.
By the way, I've heard this dichotomy between white bread and whole wheat bread and all this kind of business. Is there a real difference?
I don't think there is. Most of the whole wheat bread that we get is colored bread. There are some whole wheat breads that, in fact, are made with whole flours, and those are desirable. And actually, to me, they taste better. They have more body, and they have some real taste to them.
So how do you know if it's colored bread or if it's whole wheat bread?
Read the label, Sandy. It'll tell you whether it's made truly with whole wheat flour.
Okay. Suppose, do they have things like X kind of flour, whole wheat flour, other kind of flour, and that makes not whole wheat bread, it makes sort of a hybrid kind of thing?
When you're reading ingredient labels, foods are listed by how they occur, so that the first item listed is what's the most abundant. Yeah. let's go back to the juice, because that's an easy example. If you're reading your juice label and the first ingredient listed is water, that's what's mostly in that bottle. If the second item listed is high fructose corn sugar or any other kind of sugar, that's the second ingredient in quantity. So that if the juice label says water, sugar, juice, colorings, that's how things fall out. You're buying big bottles of water, and I think that's really important. When you go back to the bread, if it says bleached flour or white flour or just plain flour, that will be the first ingredient. That means there's more of that than there is of any other one thing. So read the labels. However, back to my basic premise, it's better that they eat something than nothing. So I would rather see a kid eat a jelly sandwich, even though I don't advocate high sugar breakfasts, on white bread than leave the house with nothing.
In our house, because I had heard studies that I think were done with rats eating only white bread and they all died of malnutrition, and I don't know, it was years ago, so it made a big impression on me. So I decided that none of my kids was going to be allowed to have white bread. We were going to have whole wheat bread and crack wheat bread and this kind of bread and that kind of bread. And so what happened? They ate it. But then when they went to someone else's house, the first thing they asked for was white bread.
Hey, so it was a treat when they went out.
That's right. That's right. My deprived children. I interrupted you with a bread question, but you were right in the middle of giving a whole list of important things that we should have on hand.
Milk, fruit, juice, bread or a bread product, whether it's pretzels or bread or an English muffin or a bagel, something to put on it, some cheese, some peanut butter, some cottage cheese, some yogurt, if your kids will eat it. Unfortunately, from my experience, I tend to think of breakfast as an on-the-go meal as opposed to cereal, milk, bananas, and juice, which is also something we should probably always have around.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about breakfast for kids.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with registered dietitian Patty Pukach about breakfast for kids. I always found my kids would take cereal as their fast breakfast. They'd have cereal, milk, and juice and be out the door. Of course, they ate it pretty fast. But they
had good kids.
Well, they didn't always do that, but that's what we had, so that's what they took, because that was easy for me. So I was trying to be very selective about the cereals. And again, like Sandy with the white bread, when they went to other people's houses, they got cereals that had much more sugar, or they had those little marshmallows and stuff like that. I always told them that was a treat. That was like cookies or candy, and you ate cereal for breakfast.
Absolutely.
Okay.
This sounds like an arts and crafts project, but it occurs to me for on-the-go kind of stuff for maybe middle schoolers, if you had like a Ziploc bag and it had the kind of cereal that was big enough, like the little shredded wheat bits or some those kinds of things, and nuts and raisins and that kind of, I mean, it almost sounds like whatever those snacks are called, trail mix or something. How's that?
Absolutely, Sandy. A great idea. The nuts and the raisins should be in there for treats, not for bulk. I would use a lot of cereal and a little nuts and a little raisins. Raisins are sticky and high in sugar, and they're not going to brush their teeth after that. And nuts are high in fat. They should have them, but not lots of them. And that's sort of the message of nutrition in general, I think. Have some, not a lot. Balance the old food pyramid.
There are things we want to hide, keep out of our house, lock up, or whatever. Definitely not offer in the morning, like
candy, potato chips, high fat, high sugar stuff,
soda.
So, you know, that wasn't even on the radar screen.
That's right. But I think it is with some of these kids.
I think that things that should be locked up are things that are high in fat, high in sugar, and offer nothing in the way of solid nutrition. Sodas. Earlier we talked about the breakfast bars or granola bars or whatever. Again, read the labels. Some of those are incredibly high in fat. They're made for taste and not for anything else. There's also some that are very good. It's important to read the labels, find out what works nutritionally, and then find out what your kids will eat. Because we can all fill the house up with food. And if they don't eat it, it doesn't do anybody any good.
That's what happened to me with a lot of breads I tried. They were nice and grainy, and they had all these things that sounded wholesome and delicious. And my family left them, and they got moldy.
Solved that problem.
Yep.
And I guess the granola bar business also goes for the high-energy bars that the kids are always hearing
yes.
about. So we have to read the labels.
All of those bars that we read about. Read the label. And you don't have to read the label every time you shop. You read the label, you know what works, and then you buy it again, or you don't buy it. I think it's important to know that not only are the kids busy, but we're busy. And do what works for you.
But just because it says power or energy or, you know, super nutritious doesn't mean it is.
It may be great for a marathon runner.
Mm-hmm.
It may not work in your caloric allowances for the day.
All right. Speaking of which, high-energy stuff, we're always hearing about, I don't want to start with brand names, but certain kinds of drinks that football teams use and other athletic teams use. Are those good things for kids to have in the morning?
I don't think so, Sandy. Those are balanced with electrolytes. They're for people who are sweating and working out hard. My kids don't do that while they sleep. They don't need
even if they have bad dreams.
Even with bad dreams, they don't need to replenish the electrolytes lost with sweating. They're good if somebody has diarrhea. They're good if somebody's been vomiting. And they're good if somebody's been sweating a lot.
Well, is it the kind of thing that's harmful if a kid has?
No.
I mean, if he says he wants to have it.
Except that it will fill them up and not offer them anything.
Takes up the space of the other things you listed that they should be having.
So we can have this after we've cleaned out the garage, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
To me, unless you have a kid who's running marathons or doing football practice and sweating a lot in the summer, those foods fall into my treat category.
Okay. And I guess, you know, we were thinking of how pressed we all are for time. It occurs to me one of the things we didn't say is that we're models ourselves. And so if we don't have breakfast and model not having breakfast and tell our kids they're supposed to, they might get a different message than we want to give them.
You're talking to those parents who grab coffee and a donut.
Mm-hmm. Or don't grab anything.
Absolutely. Our kids know what's going on.
To leave our parents with some kind of help, what resources would you recommend for those of us who just wish they could sleep through breakfast altogether and only deal with lunch and dinner?
There's some good books out. Vicki Lansky's Feed Me, I'm Yours is a nice one. Ann Litt's Eating Well on Campus is geared toward older kids. They both have good, solid nutrition information in them. Also, I would read your local newspaper's health section, food section. The American Dietetic Association has good information, solid information. Read it, digest it, and pull out what works for you. Also, the American Academy of Pediatrics, I believe, has a website, and they often put out nutrition information geared probably toward younger kids. Breakfast, I think, is an issue that starts early or kids not wanting it.
Well, certainly we got a lot of information today, and we really appreciate the opportunity to learn more about what to do about breakfast. So thank you very much, Patty Pukach, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.